Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that all too often looks around and asks, what is this beautiful studio? Who are these beautiful people? And most of all, how did we get here? If any of those questions sounds remotely familiar, then you're likely a fan of the rock band Talking Heads, the members of which, behind their charismatic leader David Byrne, ask similar types of questions in their song Once in a Lifetime. And quoting that song is fitting, as Jonathan Demme's 1984 documentary featuring the band, Stop Making Sense, is playing, or will be playing, at select theaters nationwide. The three of us watched it at AMC River Park Square in IMAX format, and our bodies are still thrumming from the experience. It got us to thinking about the film, about the band, and about concert films in general, all of which we plan to talk about, beginning with our reactions to a movie that is going on four decades old, yet still manages to rock out as well as any concert film ever has. It's hard to narrow down the kind of music that Talking Heads is famous for. How do you describe it? New wave, post-punk, art pop, and funk rock are just a few of the terms that have been used to characterize what David Byrne, Jerry Harrison, Chris Franz, and Tina Weymouth created during their heyday in the 1980s. The very best of that music was captured in the concert documentary shot by Oscar-winning director Jonathan Demme over 3 days in December 1983 at Hollywood's Pantages Theater. On tour to promote their album Speaking in Tongues, the quartet is joined by a number of other singers and musicians, notably guitarist Alex Weir and keyboardist Bernie Worrell, and they perform a number of the songs that they made famous, including Psycho Killer, Burning Down the House, Life During Wartime, and, of course, Once in a Lifetime. There have been many concert films made over the decades, as we will get to in the second half of this week's show. Few, if any, however, surpass Stop Making Sense in making us feel as if we are on the stage with one of the best rock bands ever to play music.
Well, yeah, Talking Heads are one of my favorite bands, and this is one of my favorite movies, and I think, without question, the best concert film. I really don't think anything comes close. I suppose the only way you wouldn't be won over by this is if you just didn't like Talking Heads or the music that they made. But I mean, the sheer joy that emanates from this movie is so contagious. And it also completely belies all of the drama that went on behind the scenes with this band. They were sort of famously fractious in so many ways.
Gee, that never happens with any other band.
That's true. But you would never know it watching this, because something I've always appreciated about Talking Heads and about Stop Making Sense is that they were a weird band. They made strange, kind of alienating music that also managed to be super danceable and poppy and catchy.
Absolutely.
It's just one of those great marriages of strange lyrics, just really straight up catchy music. And yet there's no sense of annoying intellectualism to their performance. There's no, you know, remove from their interactions with the audience. The audience is not on screen, but you feel them throughout the movie. You sense that
they're
everyone
only on,
in that theater
they're
is
only
just
on screen
having a great time.
At the very end,
the very,
just
very
a
end.
Couple of shots.
Right. And as I understand it, Jonathan Demme originally wanted more shots of the audience, but thought that it got in the way of what was happening on stage. And I think that was a good call on his part. But yeah, everyone in this movie seems to be having a terrific time. And again, it just rubs off on us. And I think that one of the reasons that Stop Making Sense is the greatest concert film is that it's sort of a deconstruction of a traditional concert, and therefore a deconstruction of the traditional concert film, because up to this point, kind of the only real innovations in the genre were in the post-production. So you look at something like Woodstock, which used all of this really innovative split-screen technology,
right,
or Scorsese's The Last Waltz, where he, you know, storyboarded and really meticulously put together something while he was filming it on the fly. Or, you know, even just the way that live sound was recorded. But the innovations in Stop Making Sense start right at the staging, just the way that this movie is put together, because it begins with David Byrne coming out by himself with a guitar and a boombox.
And the very first thing you see are his feet.
The camera
sneakers
following him out.
Yes.
And he plays a Psycho Killer. And then one by one, the rest of the band fills out, mm-hmm, till they get to the full 9-piece band. They've coalesced and they light into Burning Down the House. And it is one of the great
openings, yes,
moments,
right,
yeah,
in any movie.
And the other thing I think when you're talking about putting this all together, I mean, this was the merger of four different nights of performance. Mm-hmm. And so the only way you can tell that is their outfits change.
Yeah, and there's little continuity errors if you've seen this a million times like
right,
I have.
Right.
You'll notice
overall, I think they did a good job with it. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And the three of us have seen other aspects. We've seen David Byrne in other productions.
Incarnations.
Yeah.
Right. But only one of us, Nathan, only one of us has seen the actual Talking Heads in person.
And it's not me.
It isn't me either.
But it wasn't the Stop Making Sense, Burning Down the
please.
House.
Oh, please.
You saw them before that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So,
but still, some of the same songs.
Now, here's why I liked the film compared to the concert experience. Because back in the day, I could not have afforded the front row seat that this film gives me. So I saw it at the Mann Music Center in Philadelphia, which is sort of this outside venue and, you know, sitting on the grass and so forth and so on. And that's what I liked about this up close version, because you can see the joy and the interaction among the performers in a way that was not obvious.
Especially in IMAX.
Yes.
Which is how the three of us saw it.
And this was the first time I had seen Stop Making Sense on a big screen, and I sat real, real close, and I had a great time. And, you know, the interesting thing, too, about the history of the band at the point that this movie was made is that they were wrapping up the Speaking in Tongues tour. So this is right near the end of that. They did a few more shows after that. And then they never toured again. And I don't know if that was something that they had planned already, if David Byrne already knew.
I don't think it was what everyone had planned.
No, that's definitely true. But it does sort of feel like an accidental last hurrah in that way. It feels like everyone has taken their reserves of energy, have saved it up for this particular occasion, and they're just letting loose. And yeah, Demi's camera, and this was shot, by the way, by Jordan Cronenweth, who had just filmed Blade Runner. He went from Blade Runner to this film. And the way that his camera is so up close and yet so unobtrusive, it never feels like there's a barrier between the camera and the performer. Even though they're sometimes performing for the camera, Steve Scales, who's one of the percussionists in particular, is mugging for the camera and over again and clearly having
a great time. One point, Byrne offers the microphone to the camera also.
To us in the audience.
Yes.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about Jonathan Demme, because I feel like he made a career out of being, you
know,
he
only won an Oscar, right?
Yeah. I mean, he hadn't won an Oscar yet. I think at this point in his career, he was best known for Melvin and Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably wouldn't be the first name on most people's list of who's the guy that could film the Talking Heads in concert. But I feel like he made a career out of being the guy who would get hired where you'd think Jonathan Demme's directing this and then do an amazing
job. Off.
I mean, the fact that he made Silence of the Lambs, having never really made a horror film before, is proof of that. But I think it's fascinating that he went on after this to make many more music videos and concert films. He did stuff for Neil Young and for Justin Timberlake. And Cronenweth, who had also never shot a concert film before, went on to have a career doing that same thing. He shot U2 Rattle and Hum, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of artists in 1984, 1985, when this was kind of finding a cult audience in theaters, and it apparently played in theaters for months and months and months because people kept coming back to see it, I think a lot of artists saw this movie and thought, well, I want to do that too.
Right.
I want my own Stop Making
Sense.
Right,
because you want the visuals. And of course, this was also during the MTV era.
Right.
And so we were used to pairing visuals and auditory sensibilities.
We
beginning to do that, honestly, as you well know, I'm not the most auditory person. And so for me, why this works so well is because of the visuals and the great soundtrack and the circumstances under which we saw it. And the theater was not particularly filled.
No.
And it was a really wide range of audience members. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure anyone was rocking out to the extent that I was, but, you know, just putting that out there.
No one was rocking out as much as you were, but I was moving too. I could not stop. And I just have to say that from the opening moments to the closing credits, I had a smile on my face the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
It is such a good-spirited, amazing experience.
So, Nathan, you said you went with a group, and some of people in your age cohort had not seen the film before, were not familiar with it. So what was their response?
Oh, I mean, everyone had a great time. And I think it helped that everyone was more or less a Talking Heads fan. I don't know if they were as big a fan as I am. But the thing that we were talking about after the movie was just the conceptual daring of so much of this, because each song kind of gets its own little kind of
vignette. Yeah,
yeah. Like a central idea about it. And another major element of this film we haven't talked about is the big suit that has become kind of an iconic image, even though it's really only in one or two songs that Byrne comes out in. But yeah, I just love, you know, they play This Must Be the Place and it's like they're in a living room and they do Once in a Lifetime and the camera never leaves Byrne and he's doing his, you know, his like kind of street preacher thing that he did, the character he plays in the music video. So there are all these really wonderful ideas going on, and yet it
then
never
the aerobic the aerobic sequence.
And yeah, when they do a Life During Wartime, I mean, that's again one of those ecstatic moments. But none of those big ideas get in the way of the performance, of the music, of just the sheer energy going on.
Of the musicianship.
Oh, yeah.
They're all really good musicians.
So good. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Chris Franz, a heck of a drummer.
Oh, yeah.
Tina Weymouth on the bass.
And it's such a diverse cast, too.
Yes.
I mean, and I think that just putting all these different elements together, because some people say, oh, well, you know, it sounds the same. And it does not.
Yeah.
Sorry, does not.
Oh, like all their songs sound the same? Yeah, that's definitely not true.
No. At any rate, that was our discussion of the re-release of the 1984 concert documentary, Stop Making Sense. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk more about music as it has been portrayed on both the big and small screen. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
70% of our listeners prefer to purchase products and services from public radio program underwriters, according to a recent NPR survey. Spokane Public Radio listeners appreciate program underwriters because they also help support the station and programs they listen to each and every day. You can find information about becoming a program underwriter and our current underwriters on our website at SpokanePublicRadio.org under Business Support Underwriting. Through this relationship, we can all help keep the region growing strong, whether it's our diverse business community or Spokane Public Radio.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Jonathan Demme's 1984 concert documentary, Stop Making Sense. Let's now move to some of our other favorite concert films. If Jonathan Demme was onto something good when he shot the performance of Talking Heads in 1983, he clearly wasn't the only one. A number of filmmakers, from the likes of Demme and Martin Scorsese to otherwise little-known ones, such as Woodstock director Michael Wadley, have attempted to capture the feel for some kind of music, either through a single performance or blend of performances, as Demme did with Stop Making Sense, or through an overall study of a group coping with all the aspects that pursuing a career in music entails. What with the Taylor Swift concert film The Eras Tour coming to theaters on October 13th, we thought we'd run down some of our favorite music documentaries. First, let's hear Nathan define the difference between a concert film and a music documentary, and then start us off by listing some of his favorites.
Well, I think the distinction there is maybe a little blurry, because I think those phrases, sometimes you could kind of swap them out for one another. They're interchangeable in some ways. But I would say if I had to define the differences, it would be that a more traditional music documentary is primarily educational in some way. You know, it's filling us in on the life and career and maybe even the influence of a particular musician, or looking into a band's dynamics or what an entire genre of music meant to the world and how it evolved over the years. Whereas a concert film is primarily concerned with capturing, as we talked about in the first half of the show, the electricity of a live performance, what it's like to actually be there in person while this band is performing at this particular place and time. And I think you have a movie like, again, we mentioned this before, but The Last Waltz, the 1978 Scorsese documentary, that's a little bit of both, because that's, you know, a bunch of live performances interspersed with interviews with the band members. And I will say that I've also seen The Last Waltz 100 times. And the older I get, the less interested I am in the band interviews that interrupt the music. And
but you don't like Neil Diamond?
You know, the Neil Diamond part is okay, although he does kind of stick out like a sore thumb in that movie, I will say. I like the Van Morrison performance very much and the Joni Mitchell one, but that's The Last Waltz. That's a conversation for another day. So I think that I nailed that. I think that that's sort of where the distinction lies. And with Stop Making Sense, you have zero interviews with the band. Like, they don't really speak at all except for the few things that David Byrne and even Chris Franz say into their microphones, and that's
well about. And I'm gonna reduce this to a subgenre, because if you talk about The Last Waltz, that has been orchestrated in some respects for film versus filming a concert.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just use Bruce Springsteen as an example.
Okay.
So if you look at his film after the E Street Band reunited in like 1991, and it's more of a concert film, right? And then you have Western Stars, which was set up to be filmed and showcase this album. And
but it's a live performance.
It is a live performance, but it's not a real concert, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And then you have his performance on Broadway, and that was meant for a live theater audience, which has also been filmed. And so those are different illustrations of music documentary concert films.
A theme.
Right,
and
correct.
Let me give you two other examples of what might be more concert films like Stop Making Sense. How about Amazing Grace, the Aretha Franklin documentary that was lost for 40 years?
And that's just a straight up performance.
Right.
There are little interstitials here and there, but for the most part,
I agree.
Like Aretha, she's not on screen talking about her approach and her intentions. Mm-hmm. She's just singing.
Or one of your favorites, the one you always bring up, Nathan, the Tammy Show.
Oh, yeah.
From
1964. I was going to bring it up later.
That's right. Exactly.
Good DNB to it. Yeah.
Well, so, why don't I talk about that one a little
go
bit?
Go ahead.
Because I feel like when we were talking about doing the show and we were discussing, you know, and we've talked about concert films before, but I wanted to kind of pick something that was maybe a little more off the beaten path, because I do love Stop Making Sense and I do love The Last Waltz. But those are the two ones that everyone always goes to. When you say, what are the greatest concert films? It's usually a neck and neck race between those two. And so I wanted to talk about The Tammy Show, which it's T-A-M-I, and I think it stands for something like
Teenage Awards Music International.
Yeah, but there's even a second acronym because they couldn't make up their minds about what it stood for. But that's no matter. It was filmed right before Halloween in 1964 in L.A., directed by Steve Binder, who went on to do the 68 Elvis comeback special. And it was made by American International Pictures very cheaply. And it's basically just this thing that was shot on video, converted to film. And it's just a kind of a cavalcade of stars from the time. And it's like emceed or hosted by Jan and Dean. And I always laugh because Jan and Dean have to introduce the Beach Boys. And I'm like, yeah, that's Jan and Dean, you know, couldn't carry the Beach Boys surfboard. But you've got the Beach Boys, Chuck Berry, Leslie Gore, Jerry and the Pacemakers. Then you've got the Motown trifecta of Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Marvin Gaye, and the Supremes. And that's before
the Supremes.
Oh, my God. And that's before we get to James Brown, who comes in and says, this is how it's done. Watch me do it. And just burns the place to the ground.
And didn't.
Then they're followed by the closers, the
Rolling Stones,
who you can tell from their performance are very mad that they had to follow James Brown. And they later on said that was one of the biggest mistakes of their career, was that they acquiesced and said, sure, we'll play after him, because they were the biggest thing going at the time.
Yeah.
But I have a Blu-ray of the Tammy Show that also has its sequel, The Big TNT Show, which has the Ronettes and Ray Charles and Ike and Tina Turner and The Lovin' Spoonful. So if you can get your hands on that Blu-ray, I watch it all the time. Anytime
can't
I need
can we take
like
it from your house?
You can borrow it, but I have like a week-long, you know, return policy, so you need to get it back.
Oh, this is like a life on the farm.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. But yeah, so anytime I need a pick-me-up, I reach for The Tammy Show. So that's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was trying to do some research for this, and of the many listings that I found online, no one mentioned the Buena Vista Social Club, which is one of my favorite. It isn't a concert documentary. It isn't a concert, but it is about the rediscovery of all these old Cuban musicians and Ry Cooder going down there and trying to get them together and having a show. And for a while, they were popular and had a really good Well, we bought the CD.
The CD, I feel like there was a period where it was everywhere. Like, yes, if anyone had one quote unquote world music album in their collection, it was Buena Vista Social mm-hmm. Club. And let's not forget that the director of that movie was Wim Wenders.
Yes.
So we've got, you know, we're talking about these concert films, music documentaries,
Summer
whatever.
Of Soul.
Yes, but they're all directed by people that aren't necessarily associated with music or
documentaries. But also some great names like Monterey Pop, D.A. Pennebaker. Metallica, Some Kind of Monster by Joe Berger and Bruce Sanofsky.
Yeah.
Paradise
right.
Lost
yeah,
Guys. Yeah. Gimme Shelter by the Maisel Brothers.
That's one of my favorites.
You know, yeah. And it goes that, on I, and
Gimme
on
Shelter
and on.
Is not only one of the great music documentaries, it's one of the scariest movies I've ever
Absolutely.
Seen.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, if we go back and look at these music documentaries, concert films that show up on the top 10 lists, you know, that are ubiquitous on the internet, what's missing here? Oh, now for the first time, we're starting to see Beyonce. We're starting to see Taylor
That's right.
Swift. I mean, this is a very male-oriented list. And
yeah,
so I
good
like
point.
The fact that we have some options now that we're showcasing.
And doesn't that have something to do with Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone?
Oh, yeah.
Come
I mean,
on.
Yeah, absolutely
you know?
True.
I
yeah.
mean, I looked at the list in
Jan?
2012
Jan,
of the readers, Rolling Stone readers list. There's not one on here, let me see, not one single one that isn't a white or British group.
Yeah, so it's we'll blame Jan Wenner. It's all his fault. And I will also say that I'm glad you brought up the Beyonce film because Homecoming.
Her yes. But we reviewed on this
we
show.
Did. And that is an incredible feat of concert filmmaking.
From Coachella.
Yes.
yes.
Of
absolutely.
Editing.
Of the two-night performance.
Because we talked about how Stop Making Sense is pretty seamless in the way they put together multiple concerts. The Homecoming performance is deliberately not seamless. She wants to show you that we filmed this on two separate nights with people wearing different colored costumes, but we are so in sync and so right on the money that we can intercut them
mm-hmm.
and
right.
it still works. And
yeah.
so that is a really remarkable film. And I'm also glad that you brought up the Taylor Swift movie, which hasn't come out yet, but is already selling out everywhere because it's like the biggest tour in history. And so people are already getting their advance tickets. I'm actually looking forward to seeing that because
yeah,
you know,
I am
yeah,
too.
We
with,
are
yeah.
too.
With the amount of money that clearly went into that tour, you know that the film version is going to be really good and they're putting it out in IMAX. And so if you couldn't get a ticket to that tour, this is maybe the next best thing.
I mean, if you
thing.
Couldn't afford
know.
A ticket to that tour.
I mean, I didn't even bother because it kind of sounded like nobody was
First of all, getting tickets
lucky.
Itself, I don't care how much money you were spending, was really difficult.
Yeah, it's tough. So I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, I'm glad that we're sort of having this kind of mini resurgence of this because it's a genre
well,
that I love a lot.
Because this is bringing it to a much
yes.
broader audience
yes.
that would never have the opportunity
right.
to see
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that was our rundown of some of our favorite concert and or documentary films. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discuss the 1984 film Stop Making Sense. Let's take this moment to thank Cassia Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. Without music, life would be a mistake. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.